Hey, what's going on, guys? Dan Berman here, Taxation is Theft. And today I've got Dane Posner with me.
Representing
Dane,
the theft argument.
yes, libertarian, representing the Libertarian Socialist Caucus, right? Is that right?
Libertarian Socialist Caucus of the Libertarian Party,
Okay,
not to be
cool.
confused with the DSA.
With the.
The DSA has a Libertarian Socialist Caucus as well, so this is for the Libertarian Party.
Ah, okay. Okay, cool. So Dane, so first let me get this out of the way. I know most of my audience is mostly ANCAP, anarchist. They really don't like socialism. But if you can kind of just bear with us for a little while, because I did talk to Dane at the Libertarian National Convention. And first, I want to say this: like, I've tried to talk to socialists before, and they usually get like angry. And of course, these are like the Democratic socialists. And they really don't like to talk at all. So first, I just want to say, Dane, even though we might disagree on some things, I really appreciate you taking the time to have a civil conversation with me about some of our differences.
Absolutely.
With that said, there's also so because let's start with this. Because you're a libertarian, what's let's start with like what are some of the things that you have in common with what people normally associate libertarians or the ANCAPs.
So, I'm opposed to state control and the extortion that we face. We're basically the things that we agree on, we don't believe that in paying taxes to fund our own oppression. We're anti-police state, anti-drug war, pro sex work, pro anything that doesn't harm another individual. We're all pro-liberty. We believe in liberty for all. We oppose military interventions on our tax dime, ruining other bombing other countries, because that ultimately ends up affecting our own economy, and it's only benefiting a few instead of the people, and we're being extorted by the day, so it's something that I'm sure we can agree on.
Right. Yeah, and it sounds like I think most of my audience will agree with 99% of that so far. So let me ask this, since the name of our channel is Taxation is Theft, is taxation theft?
Yes, especially on the lower class, because we are taxed more in proportion to our income than the wealthy class.
Right. Yeah, and that's something I point out a lot. You know, if the government takes $100 from a poor person, it does a lot more damage than if it take $100 from a wealthy person, or even $10,000.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Since so many of us, especially in my generation, are working paycheck to paycheck, with two to three jobs, 40 to 60 hours a week, and still barely being able to get by. So paying into a system on top of that and not even getting the benefits of that system is just, I mean, that's absolutely theft.
Right. Okay, cool. And this is why I like talking to you, because I think there are, a lot of people, a lot of libertarians hear the word socialist, and they're like, "Ooh, Bernie Sanders," or they jump to a lot of conclusions, and they really kind of put up a wall before they hear anything else. And I think, right here alone, we've heard a lot of really great things. Let's start getting into some of the differences. Well, actually, no. First, let me ask a couple other questions, because I heard, as you were mentioning the some of the similarities, you said you're for legalization of sex work. So this is, I guess, this is just an interesting question that comes up, because a lot of people presume that socialists are against any kind of work. But of course, we're talking about a right to work versus being punished for working. What's kind of the libertarian socialist, and can I say libsoc? Is that how you say the abbreviated version?
Some people say libsoc, some people say libsoc. I say
Okay,
libsoc.
so
It's your preference. It doesn't matter.
okay, cool. So what's the libsoc kind of stance on any type of work?
So, I mean, we believe that, I mean, anybody should do, the type of work that best suits them. And, if that's sex work, as long as it's consensual, there shouldn't be any hindrance to that, especially by the state, because that prostitution is illegal in most of the country, sex workers are put in more danger because they have to operate on the black market. So it's a fun fact, the way people interpret, normal socialism is usually with like Leninism, Stalinism. Lenin actually authorized the massacre of a bunch of prostitutes, thousands of prostitutes, after the Bolshevik Revolution. So that's not a socialist perspective at all. So all socialism is we believe that the workers deserve the rights to the means of production. Those that labor should be entitled to the fruits of their labor. So sex work is goes in line with that. It's self-ownership. It's not harmful to anybody. And a lot of people would probably argue, and I'm sure there's statistics to back up that it makes the world a better place. Humans have urges, and that's something that's necessary. It should be valued. It shouldn't be shamed. It's something natural. The world's oldest profession.
So it sounds like you're pretty much for the open exchange of I have something you want, you have something I want, let's exchange those things, which that's kind of the foundation of what the anarcho-capitalism is. So what's different in that, or is there anything different in that alone, in that aspect alone, as far as the socialism?
So I don't necessarily believe in currency, that form of trading, because it is a state that gives currency value. I mean, of course, the markets have the influence, but of course, the state prints the currency. So what we feel is that if somebody wants to trade, if somebody wants to just offer their services to live in the community, we believe that it's a valuable resource. Labor is a resource. You could exchange it for natural resources, but it doesn't even necessarily have to be a trade, not even necessarily a barter system. I mean, that is classical libertarian philosophy. Proudhon talked about open markets, and by today's standards, he'd be considered a socialist, and he was one of the founders of libertarianism. So we feel that, I mean, we don't necessarily need to make a profit. It's just offering a service to reap the benefits of the rest of the community. Everybody plays their role. You don't need any sort of central planning. It's just a cooperative sort of environment. So that's basically what libertarian socialists believe.
So now is so you're kind of and don't get me wrong, plenty of libertarians are against fiat currency especially, but they might be interested in using something like gold or silver or Bitcoin even as a currency, because those values are the values are, they're still kind of made up by a market, but at least they can't be tampered with the way government can tamper with a fiat currency. So is that an acceptable form of currency in your ideal society?
So I don't see gold or silver as valuable personally, even if the market has decided that it is. That's something that a group of people decided that did have value. What I believe in is that actual resources that help people are valued. Food, water, the right to clean air, land. Everybody deserves a right to shelter. We don't believe that any of those resources should be capitalized on, because it can steal from the community as a whole, and it renders basically into an artificial scarcity, kind of like what Stalin did.
So with this, so this means that so let's say in a completely ANCAP society, it wouldn't be favored to use a fiat currency, but if anybody wanted to, of course they could. So in your ideal society, would it be forbidden to use a fiat currency or gold or silver or Bitcoin as a currency?
It wouldn't be necessary. We believe in a resource-based economy where you have, like I said, everything that you need. There's no necessity for gold or silver. That doesn't provide any nutrition, no substance. It doesn't do anything for the human population. It's been given a value, based on thousands of years of it being passed down as being valued. It's been socially accepted to be that way, but from my perspective, I don't see that as valuable. It wouldn't be banned, but it
Right,
wouldn't be necessary.
and I'm not trying to argue that. I mean, I completely agree with everything you're saying. It is pretty much, I mean, it's got a few practical uses, but for the most part, it's kind of useless for everybody, except that it's shiny and everybody likes it. So if my question is really, if we have your ideal society, and I come along and I say, yeah, but I'd rather not barter directly with these two things that I want to trade. I'd rather trade one for gold and silver, so that, for whatever reason, it makes my transaction simpler. Would that be okay with you for me to do that, for not to force you to do it with your transactions, but for me to do it with my own.
I mean, of course, there'd be a transitional period to the kind of society that I like to envision. So, I think that's going a step from fiat currency. But I don't, like I said, I don't see it as valuable. Most people with my philosophy don't see it as valuable. Like I said, we just believe in what is necessary.
So I could
But if
have.
you want to trade, you can. If you want to
Okay.
trade and you're, in Kapistan, have your area, as long as you are not depriving my community of resources, that's, you can
Perfect.
do what
Okay,
you want.
that's what I was getting at, because I guess what scares a lot of people with any type of politics is, this politician's going to come and they're going to take away something that you like. So what I can appreciate is if you can say, like you just said, if you want to do that type of trade with somebody else, that's fine, but I don't want to have anything to do with that. That makes total sense. And that's totally compatible with libertarianism or
Thought
the
immunity.
yeah. So far, like, that doesn't sound like you're trying to take you're trying to take my stuff away or anything else. And I see some questions coming in, so I'll get to those in a little bit too. I have to ask this question. This is probably like a ridiculous one, but it's one that all of us libertarians get asked. In a lib soc society, who would build the roads?
The community that finds them necessary. If you need roads, if you need a path to clear, the community can decide, hey, we can do this, it'll benefit all of us. Somebody can provide water resources from a nearby well. Everybody plays their role. So it's just the community. You don't need a state, you don't need extortion to fund those roads. Everything is driven by human labor, not by capital.
Okay, so again, that sounds very ANCAP. It's well, of course, there's no profit or anything in there, which is actually that's an interesting point I'd like to point out about ANCAP. Even though I favor ANCAP, there's really, I also talk a lot about making donations, contributing to, like, voluntarily to social programs and all these other things, which is, for some reason, that's considered ANCAP, but it's not really. I guess if you think of capitalism as, the profiteering system, it's really nothing. It's just an. It's just anarchism without, any sort of suffix. Okay, cool. So, I guess so. With roads, you come along to some types of problems typically, right? So, let's say you have a small village and you've built a road across it. And somebody else wants to say, hey, we want to travel from this point over here all the way to this point over here on the other side, and they want to pass through, and they want to use, oops, I just lost my camera.
Uh-oh.
They just want to use your road.
Yeah, that's totally fine. I believe in the right to free movement.
Now, what happens if too many people start to use that road? If it gets overcrowded and there's too much traffic, it starts slowing things down. And I understand you could say, okay, well, we'll volunteer and say we want to
Expand the
expand
road.
it. But what if none of these outsiders want to expand on it? So they just come and they say, hey, we just want to use your road, but we don't want to contribute to expanding it.
It's just, I mean, you have to come to an agreement. If it benefits both parties, then, do it. I mean, everybody has to compromise. That's, of course, that's an issue, no matter even in a state system. In anarchism, you need to compromise.
Right, but so
So, I mean,
in.
as long as you're not, like I said, depriving the community from, vital resources, why, or, going through somebody's shelter, why would anybody really care?
So in the ANCAP situation, you would say, okay, well, if you guys aren't going to pay for, if you're not going to, like, maybe they say, okay, we're going to charge a toll if you want to pass, or something like that. If you're
I
not
think it's
going to.
kind of ridiculous.
But here's the thing. So what happens realistically if. If you get so much traffic that you can't even travel, you used to be able to travel from one side of your little village to the other, in, a matter of minutes, but now it takes you an hour to go a mile across it because this road is so packed with all this traffic, and none of those people are willing to help you out. Is there any point you would either say, okay, look, either contribute or build your own road and, like, force them to go around and say you're denied entry to use this road?
I mean, like I said, I personally believe in the right to free movement, and I feel that if somebody wants to charge me to use that road, I don't believe in that. I think that why wouldn't roads be made available to all people? I don't really understand that sort of concept. I don't like the toll road concept, like especially under the state because it's a form of double taxation. But the way I look at it, if anybody needs to change anything, like I said, come to a compromise, or just don't talk to each other. Find your own lane. Like, I mean, we live in Texas, so the way I imagine it is like there's so much space. I don't see that happening. But you do have like in China that like congested roads are like sometimes I've seen truck drivers be stuck in traffic for like 4 days, or I've read about that. So it's definitely a lot more cluttered there, and it's due to lack of proper planning, really. So it's all about like learning from prior mistakes, and then if you need to expand, I mean, you got to do what you got to do to make
Well,
everything accessible.
so I think you said one thing that that we can agree on. You said, if you can't reach a compromise, tell them to, there's plenty of land and they could go around. But let's say you just have some asshole who's like, we're not gonna do that. We're just gonna use your road. We're gonna abuse your road. And we really don't care. We know we could go around, but unless you're gonna actually physically stop us from using this road, we're not going to because that's just the easiest path. Now the ANCAP way would say, okay, fine, we'll physically block you and say you're not allowed to use this because you're not contributing in any way. Would
And
the
that's
lib
back and
social
forth.
it, well, it's an act of protecting your, what you've created. It's an act of protecting your
It's hindering
society.
my right to free movement. That's affecting my individual liberty.
Well, you're
So,
allowed
I
to
mean,
use the road for free because you live in that community and you helped build it. So, there's
yeah,
nothing.
but say I wasn't. Say I was an outsider. I mean, if somebody denies me, I mean, we're all humans. I don't believe that anybody has right to privileges to a certain road. I don't, like I said, even toll roads are privileges because not everybody in the working class can afford to use them. So
And
I
that's a
feel
fair
like.
point, but at the same time, you can say, okay, the poor can't pay a toll, but at the same time, they still have to put gas in their car.
Well, actually, I mean, we're coming closer and closer. We have thousands of vehicles that have been manufactured with fully electric engines. So where you can charge it up and go from the West Coast to East Coast and back for no money at all. So the oil and gas industry is becoming obsolete.
Well, the
The reason
electricity that
that
goes
they
into these cars all comes from oil and gas at the same time. They come from these power plants that somebody's got to pay to build these power plants and produce all this electricity that's then basically piped into a charge station that goes into these cars. So it's not like it's
I'll...
free energy.
I mean, we do have the resources to have unlimited free energy across the country and across the world, with all of the automation and all the we have solar panels, we have hydroelectric power, we have geothermal power. There's so many different natural sources of energy that we can use instead of destroying the earth. I mean, switching to renewable energy right now would be most beneficial to everybody. But my issue is, I feel, I mean, the oil and gas industry obviously doesn't want that. It gets into their profits. They don't care about the future of humanity. They don't care about my kids. They don't care about my grandkids. They don't care what happens as long as they're making profits. And so it's stubborn. I mean, they wouldn't, the reason that they're so powerful is because of government subsidies in this, especially in this country
Absolutely.
and then in other countries as well. That's my tax dime. That's corporate welfare. I don't support that while, people are starving and dying in the street. That's not right.
Absolutely. And I think ANCAPs would totally agree with you there. We're mostly against corporate welfare because it's paid for with theft. But for somebody to say, okay, that's a lot of solar panels, or that's a lot of windmills that need to be built in order to fuel an entire nation or the entire world. Who's going to actually build all those that has the technology and the resources without, who's just going to do that for the good of humanity? I think there are some good people who are willing to donate time and effort and money towards that, but it seems like a lot of people are going to say, well, hey, if I'm going to put in all this work, I better get a little something out of it. I might get like a nicer house to live in, or I might get air conditioning where everybody else doesn't have it, or just some little perks to having created all this energy for everyone. Aren't they due something?
So if people weren't prevented to access to a bunch of these resources, and if solar panels weren't made so expensive by government, you know, if a lot of these renewable energy sources didn't have tariffs laid on them, you know, it would be a lot more affordable. And ultimately, I mean, we could install them for free. I mean, I know I personally would, you know, want to do that if I could afford it, or if I knew, you know, if I had the materials to manufacture the solar panels, you know, I would absolutely do that. I know a bunch of people that would. So, but right now, I mean, the government doesn't want you to do that. I mean, there's different HOAs as well that you can't have solar panels on your house, and you have to pay fees and all that. And it's all theft, just because it's ending our reliance on certain industries that are allied with our government.
Right, and I totally get that, and I'm definitely not arguing against any of the subsidies or, you know, the government jacking up the prices on anything. It just seems that most of the innovation that I see, people do it mostly for the money. Some people enjoy it. Like, some people enjoy tinkering with electronics and discovering new things and building and everything else. But at the same time, a lot of that takes money, and it takes research time. It takes technology and everything else. And a lot of times you have investors who are going to say, I want to see these things. Let's say we have these big supercomputers, you know, we want to discover something about quantum physics, and we need these big supercomputers to calculate all these mathematical algorithms. And these are like multi-million-dollar computer systems that need to be built to be able to do this. That's not just something that, hey, we can all get together and we'll scrape up some old computer parts and build this thing. This is like, you've got like just the manufacturing equipment that goes into building one single microprocessor costs millions of dollars. And the research that goes into it takes efforts of hundreds of thousands of people who you know, all contribute to this final thing. And a lot of those people would otherwise just say, well, I'm not really interested in doing that. And like, you know, and I'll even give you this, like, once people have that knowledge, a lot of people want to do something with it. But the reality is, most people that go to college for some certain thing are there because of the money, whether it's, oh, if you want to learn to study in this, you know, become a doctor, you're going to make a lot of money. If you become a lawyer, you're going to make, if you become a technician, you know, a computer engineer. And yes, some people are actually interested in the money plays less of a role in that, but a lot of that is really motivated by money.
Yeah, because that's capitalist propaganda, and that's state propaganda, you know. And they're, you know, saying like, yeah, if you work hard, if you go to college, you know, you'll be able to be rich someday, and you know, you're constantly chasing that dream. But the truth is, it's a very small minority that ever ends up living comfortably. You know, more and more people are suffering, and so yeah, because of this capitalist system, we are forced to, you know, work for money. You know, that's the way it is, because
okay, but if
we have.
I guess I'm talking about the motivation. So what you're saying might be true to some degree, but like, how do you motivate somebody to want to go to college, to want to spend, you know, 4 or 8 years in college to learn something highly technical, and then to want to go in and spend 40 hours a week, you know, or you know, 20, whatever they end up doing, to contribute to like build these things? If like, what is the incentive? What's their how do you motivate them?
So it's moving forward. If people didn't have to worry about their bills, they would be able to focus on their passions. They would be able to pursue hobbies, you know, which could ultimately lead to innovation. So if they didn't have struggles to worry about, if they had, you know, access to free or affordable housing, because there are almost six times as many abandoned houses as there are people in the United States, you know, the people would be able to focus more on what they want to do. So yeah, it's just like, it's innovation has happened throughout all of humanity, and capitalism is a relatively new economic system, you know. So that's like saying, oh, we haven't evolved, you know, since, you know, tens of thousands of years ago, you know. So innovation is always going to happen. Innovation is driven by labor, not by capital. You know, capital is the incentive that really the state gives you. The state is who prints currency. That's who, you know, basically feeds you propaganda saying that, yeah, you have to do this. And they're, you know, preaching a lot of like false hopes and dreams for a lot of people. Because, you know, a lot of people in my generation, like I said, can't even afford to go to college, or they're, you know, up their neck in student loan debt. You know, most people, they're like, I'll never be able to pay that off. You know, that's not right. Education is not affordable. with or without government subsidization. Same thing with healthcare.
Right, and I well, what I actually argue is that government is the reason that that college is so unaffordable, because they're basically printing the money to create these loans that are inflating the prices on everything. So, it sounds like we're kind of in agreement on that part. There's a question here from Cameron. This is kind of getting off topic a little bit, but he wants to know, what is rent is theft, and how is that libertarian? And I think I actually had this conversation with you at the convention, but why don't you go ahead and explain it from your perspective?
Yeah, so the way I see it is, most landlords don't provide a service. There is a shelter, and you're giving them your residual income every month to not really do anything. A lot of times, like where I live personally, I have to keep everything up. I have to do all the repairs myself. And it's not, they're not contributing any service or value to me. And so, like I said, it is labor that has created these houses, and there are six times as many houses as there are homeless people, and they're abandoned. They're not being leased. They're not, some of them, especially that have been damaged by natural disasters, they're not even up for lease. But if a homeless person decides to go and occupy one that's had nobody there, the police can come on your dime and throw them in free public housing, which ends up costing the taxpayer way more than if we just had housing for everybody. It's a racket, because there is a profit to be made off of the private prison industry. So, and that's, it's enslavement. It's not right.
Right.
In regards to rent is theft. Like I said, if somebody's not contributing any value, why should I pay them?
So let me ask you this: isn't the shelter that you're living in a contributed value? Like you said, it was created with labor.
Yeah, it was built by labor, but even then, the workers don't own the means of production. So, the laborers that built it, they got an arbitrary wage to construct it. So it wasn't the landlord that necessarily did that. And like I said, there are millions of, I think it's 18.6 million
right,
abandoned properties.
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's talk about this for a minute, because I get the abandoned property argument. I think it's a totally different topic. But so let's try to stick to this. So the landlord, let's say the landlord, he didn't build it himself, but he paid someone to build it. He still had to trade his labor for that money to be able to pay somebody to build it. So it's really, and so maybe he traded his labor for, $50,000, and then he gave, out of that 50,000, he gave 40,000 to somebody, to actually build it, and including materials. And now he's got a house that's valued at, 70,000. What's really so wrong with any, which one of those steps does this go wrong for him to own this?
So, like I said, if somebody wanted to charge rent in a stateless society, what's going to give anybody the incentive to pay that rent? That you are threatened with force for not paying rent. So, if you end up, like I said, occupying a place or building your own shelter right now with the state in place, they can tell you that you're not allowed to do that. You can't make your own shelter. You have to pay into the government. And I don't see land ownership as a whole lot different if you're charging people rent, because that's, rent costs more than taxes out of my paychecks, out of my monthly budget.
Right, but you're getting a lot for that value. So like, let's say government's out of the picture, because I want to do that too. And you find a little piece of land and there's nobody on it, and you want to build your own shelter. Are you really going to have as nice a home as one you're living in now, that's got like smooth painted walls and electricity and plumbing and all these other things, if you just build it yourself and not?
Well, it very well could, because I am an anarcho-communist. So I believe in, finding community that's down to do that. Everybody's got that has certain skills that could help to create something. And right now, especially in the age of 3D printing, it's becoming far less labor intensive than it ever was before. So free housing is pretty much accessible. I mean, I just recently saw that there's I think in Sweden, a 3D printer that they can print a full house for about $4,000 in cost of materials. But for those $4,000, you could actually just go retrieve those materials yourself. You don't need to pay. I mean, that's just the average cost according to the market. But it doesn't really cost capital, it's labor. So if I were just to gather those materials with some like-minded people, then, you know, all we need is a 3D printer, and, you know, we can do that.
So where do you get the 3D printer? Because like you said, the 3D printer is sold for $4,000. So if it's not for sale for a price tag, how do you acquire that?
Well, it's $4,000 for the materials. So they didn't have the price for it.
I see.
But I mean, since 3D printers can even print 3D printers, you know, that's going to be the whole new future. Is there's not going to be any really cost according to it besides the cost of human labor, you know? So yeah, I mean, if you have a bunch of like-minded people that want to share, because I mean, of course, right now the system of currency is not going to go away anytime soon. But if I do have a bunch of like-minded people that want to contribute, you know, a little bit, we can get a 3D printer, and then we no longer even have to use currency, because if we like I said, renewable energy sources to power everything up, you know, we can be self-sustainable, grow our own food. You know, we don't have to worry about the government. But of course, you know, that's a pipe dream, because the government's not okay with that, because you're taking away from the landlords. You know, the landlords don't want that. They have a lot invested in their, you know, profession, you know, where it's not really a skill. Landlordism isn't a skill. You know, carpentry is a skill for sure, but a landlord, basically a salesperson.
In your system, so the way I see this is currency is almost kind of like a proof of work. So like when you talk about blockchain, there's like a proof of work, right? So if I live in one city and let's say I contribute a lot in this city, I helped build roads, I helped build houses, and you know, I'm a big contributor. But then I say, hey, you know what? I want to move over to the next city over, and I want to see what life is like over there. And I go there, and when I get there, they're like, okay, who is this guy? Is he just some bum who's coming here to like rip off all of our stuff? Or is he a contributor to the society who's going to be, you know, a part of this community? In a capitalist society, I could go and I say, I have money. This is proof that I have worked. Of course, it could be stolen or whatever, but that's generally proof of, you know, I've done something to generate this for myself. And so you can count on me being a productive member of this society. What do you have in socialism where if you wanted to go from one city to another, they would kind of accept you and say, yes, you know, we don't have a spare house for you, but you can stay in this one. We'll make space for you. We'll be very accommodating for you. You know, because, you know, is there any sort of reason that they know? Like, do they call and get references from the other city that they know you're going to be contributing in the future, or does it not even matter?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't believe that it matters. I mean, do you really believe that, you know, those that can't contribute labor are not valuable, like disabled people that literally can't work? I mean, what happens to them in Kapistan, you know, if they can't contribute value?
I think there was an experiment that they did in New Hampshire where they had this welfare program, and, you know, all these other states were saying, we're going to drug test, and that didn't work that didn't take anyone off the welfare program. But what New Hampshire did was, they said, if you're able-bodied and you're going to be receiving money from us, then you have to do some sort of community service, you know, whether it's cleaning up parks or doing something like this. And what people basically said is, well, if we're going to have to work anyway, why don't we go get real jobs? And 80% of the people on the welfare program dropped off and went and got real jobs. And of course, there was an exemption for people who were not, you know, like you said, they were disabled for whatever reason. It's not really... you know, right to expect them to be able to contribute. But if you're perfectly able to contribute, shouldn't you? I mean, is it right for somebody who's able to contribute to just sit there and eat all of your food and take up space in all of your shelter, or force you to build another shelter to accommodate him? And you know, he's not helping to carry his own weight, even though he can. Is that's not a problem?
So the way I see it is, everybody's entitled to resources. Everybody deserves the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? If you say that, oh, because you can't work, or even if you refuse to work, you can't eat, I don't think that's right. If you have, enough available, and considering the amount of land that we have, there is plenty of land available, and with technology, you can grow food indoors. There's a huge surplus, and in the United States, we're so wasteful about that. Supermarkets throw good produce away, and that's illegal in France. That's basically, I see it as a crime against humanity. To deprive somebody of something that's vital, regardless of what they can contribute. You might not,
Right, but I guess
what.
I'm not even suggesting really depriving them. I'm just saying, let's say I'm going to use the example, there's bananas up in a tree, right? And you can go up in the tree and you can get your bananas and you can eat. Now this other person, they refuse to climb the tree. You're not depriving them because you're not preventing them from climbing the tree, and they're able to climb the tree. They just don't want to. They'd rather have you climb the tree and get them for them because he wants to be served. He wants you to be his, his servant and go get the bananas for him. Is there any point where you would say, like, you're abusing my charity, and I'm not going to allow you to do that, because there are people who will abuse that. Is there any point where you'd say, no, just climb the damn tree and get it yourself?
Well, I mean, at the point where you don't, if you don't have enough for yourself, if they're taking, more, if they're taking too much from you, and it's at that point, depriving of you of you liberty, depriving you of your liberty. It's all about, the mutual system, mutually benefiting each other. And if you help your fellow neighbor, generally it's going to improve the whole community. I mean, if not everybody's going to pull their own weight, and everybody's victim of circumstance, and people are put in really awful situations.
I'm
But
just talking about
as
people who are, they're not even in bad situations. They just don't want to contribute, because why? If everyone else is taking care of them, they just don't want to contribute. That's the
well,
kind of person I'm talking about.
well, again, like I said, you can. I mean, food is plentiful, so. As long as, like I said, you have enough for yourself, as long as there's plenty to go around, which there's enough land and, resources available to have enough food to go around, then you wouldn't have to worry about that issue. You might not want to associate with that person, you might not want to keep them around, but I mean, to say, no, I'm going to keep more of these bananas than I need just because, I don't like you, or you don't contribute any value to me. I mean, I think that's wrong. And of course, there are, people like that, and I think that's really the difference between capitalists and socialists.
Okay, sorry, I'm trying to read through some of these questions in here. A lot of people are saying money is fake.
Yeah, it's true.
Is
Absolutely.
yeah, and I think that's something that, both sides agree with. Here, if we're going to argue that private charity will be better than government welfare, and that this private charity will fill the gaps, then why shouldn't people expect to be taken care of if they do not have access?
So, private
I,
charity.
yeah, go
I
ahead.
was in, yeah. So private charity isn't solving the problems. I mean, Jeff Bezos isn't taxed, so much that he's not able to end world hunger. He's got more than enough to do that. He's, I believe, right now the richest person in the world. So he has enough capital to do that. I know there's enough resources available. If capitalists want to prove that they really care. I mean, throwing a few thousand dollars isn't necessarily going to solve it, and I don't understand why people need to have way more than their fellow man while people are starving. I believe that, if you want to have multiple houses, that's fine as long as everybody has a house. If you have multiple houses while people are homeless and, like I said, starving, dying in the street, then that's immoral. And you're creating artificial scarcity. There's that property available, and I wish private charity would solve it, but in taxation isn't hindering it. It's a small amount to somebody like Bezos or Gates or Warren Buffett. Like I said, whereas taxation to somebody like me, a millennial with an average millennial income, I mean, obviously I can't really contribute much in the form of private charity. And you know, it's making it hard for us to survive while, you know, the wealthy minority benefit.
Right, and I can see a lot of that. I guess so. There's, you know, okay. So let's talk about like the super wealthy, right? Let's say somebody's worth $100 billion. Like, it's not like they have $100 billion in cash just sitting in a vault somewhere. Like this money is all tied up in assets and everything. And I'll agree with you I'm sure you would agree with this that the fractional reserve lending system is just totally screwed up. But like if this guy has, you know, $100 billion, some of that's sitting in banks, which is lent out to people so that they can afford to buy their houses. And I agree, that's like that action right there is inflating the price of the houses and forcing people to borrow. But nonetheless, that's helping people to buy things that they can't otherwise afford. It's not like they're just sitting there with all this money in a vault saying, you know, you can't have access to this. It would be completely different if they had, you know, let's say, and this is what the government does. I want to just take, you know, this like, you know, 500,000 square miles of land, and I'm going to call it mine because I have all this money, and I'm going to buy it from someone, and I'm going to claim that this, you know, this huge chunk of land is mine, and you can't touch it, you can't grow food on it. And I think that's a little bit ridiculous too. And I think that's something that you would agree with.
That's the main argument against property, is depriving the community from valuable resources.
But when we're talking about, you know, like there's, I don't know how many thousands of hundreds of thousands of square miles of land that we have, you know, how many houses for into how much unoccupied land is there where, you know, somebody can own three or four houses or three or four properties, and there's still plenty left over for anybody else to go take a little bit of property and build on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, both you and I live in Texas, so we know like how much land is available and how many abandoned properties are available. And like I said, if you're not depriving the community from valuable resources, then like I said, that's fine, as long as everybody has shelter, because society has come to the agreement that shelter is necessary for human life. You know, there's natural disasters to worry about. There's all kinds of stuff. Humans need food, water, and shelter. So, you know, if you want to claim a little bit of land, like I said, as long as you're not infringing upon my right to, you know, food or, you know, water, you know, you're not claiming the only water source as yours and trying to sell it to me. As long as you're not doing that, you know, you can do essentially what you want.
Right, and I can agree with the water source thing. I think, and that's a difficult one, but I think most people would agree that you can't just capitalize on some water source like, you know, what I guess Nestle does in California. But
Yeah,
okay, what about
exactly.
let me give you another scenario. You know, let's say we're in Texas and I move out to, you know, out to the woods, kind of far away from everything else, but I don't have shelter there. Is it up to anybody to have to come all the way out to where I am and build me a shelter? Or 'cause, you know, it's not like you're forcing me to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not forcing you to, yeah, I'm not forcing you to live in a shelter either. But if somebody wants shelter and there's shelter available, then they should be able to occupy that shelter as long as you're not infringing upon someone's individual liberty. So,
I
like I
see.
said, because
So this isn't more about, so this isn't so much about forcing somebody to build to, you know, because I guess that's what I see in socialism, like, or the Bernie Sanders socialism is you take someone's money, and you use that money to pay for a house. And what you're saying is no, if there's a vacant house, if there's an extra house, and nobody's in it, then it should be okay for somebody to occupy it.
yeah, I mean, like I said, there's plenty of vacant houses without, you know, any furniture. You know, if I'm walking along and there's an obviously abandoned property, open window, and I don't, you know, I've been traveling, and obviously, you know, nobody, if there's signs that nobody's living there, you know, there's no furniture, you know, I feel like I should be able to occupy that. You know, if somebody comes, if somebody had furniture in there, I'm gonna respect that. You know, like I said, as long as it's not, you know, 100,000 square acres, you know, taking up literally all the land, because I mean, that point, I mean, how is that not a kingdom? How is that not a state? You know, I feel like if we do have the resources available, it's not a matter of if we do have the resources available. We don't need money. The government is what tells us we need to use money, to use a system of currency. It makes us dependent on them. It keeps us living in this system. But another world is possible. We have resources to achieve everything that humans need and enough to innovate and go forward. We don't need the state and we don't need corporations. We need labor and automation. And, you know, so it's so we don't even, you know, really I mean, labor-intensive jobs are going away by the day. Automation is the only way forward, and we're in post-scarcity is very much achievable. It's
Right, and
something that we should all be working towards.
I totally agree with a lot of that. Like it's you know there's I started growing my little hydroponic garden a while ago with fruits and veggies, and like I see that being a reality because yeah, we are tied to this we are tied to a food supply chain that's I don't want to call it unsustainable, but it's become a dependency. They say like if that food supply chain ever goes out, it takes 24 hours before the shelves are empty at the store. And so, planning to have, smaller communities that have their own food grown locally and that sort of thing, I think is a really great idea. And especially when it's all automated and all that stuff, I think that's all like really great stuff. I guess I just don't see exactly and well, I guess I'll say this. Like when I was interested in doing that, I was spending my own money on buying the equipment and doing these things on my own. So I could see how people would be interested in doing this on their own. I guess, I just don't see how, let's say something happens with the food supply chain and I've got food in my own home. Like, is it okay if I just shut the door on my neighbors and tell them, sorry, I've only got enough for me. I don't know how long it's going to last. Is there any point where, it's okay for them to kick down my door and say, no, I know you've got food in there. I want some of it and I deserve some of it.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's okay, but I mean, well, that's essentially what's going to happen if you're in a community where, well, if you're living on a piece of land, and somebody's got the only resources available to make all the food. They have the only like hydroponic system, and there somehow like is a scarcity. People are going to try to feed themselves regardless, but that's the issue is we don't need to really worry about that now because we do have plenty of those resources available. I mean, yeah, in certain areas it might not be as achievable, as easy as others. Not every place has fertile land, especially since climate change is a thing. But hydroponic systems are available, automated growing systems are available, aquaponic systems. There's so many ways to grow food, and we're only driven by, it's basically an illusion that we're spoon-fed by the government and corporations that say, no, it's scarce. That's why you need to pay us. It's hard to get food, to make food, so you have to depend on us. And the reality is we don't need to depend on anybody but ourselves and our natural environment.
Yeah, and I think I can totally agree with that. I think where a lot of the concern that I have and a lot of other libertarians is just over, whether, like you said, even if it's, socially forbidden for you to kick down someone's door and take their food because of scarcity, it's going to happen anyway. Of course,
That's why we should be
somebody's
working. Well, yeah. That's why we should be working towards post-scarcity. That benefits everybody. Oh, go ahead.
right,
Sorry.
and I can totally agree with that. I think what I see as a problem with that is just that you've got a lot of people who are, who are addicted to government, and they believe that government is always going to take care of them. And this, I think, this is a problem that we're both concerned with. That, as long as people want government, there's always going to be government. And in order to convince these people, like it's going to be a real struggle to convince these people to kind of get off of these systems that they depend on, whether it's a socialist or capitalist system that they want to get into. To get them off of the dependency of, you know, believing that government's going to take care of us, these food suppliers are going to take care of us, no matter what happens, no matter what disasters come, we're going to be okay because of them. And so we don't need to prepare. I think that's a big mentality like that I think we're both fighting against.
So, I mean, of course, you know, centuries of state propaganda has led us to think a certain way, you know. But what we need to show is that there is a way forward, you know, that we don't need to depend on them. And once, like I said, we start growing our own food, having our own access to clean water, having access to shelter, once we achieve those things, what do we need government for? Because I mean, like I said, they're not gonna really allow that, because it cuts into you know, the profits of you know, the real estate agency, and therefore the lawmakers' pockets, you know, because obviously certain industries are investing in our government to get certain perks. So that's the reason that so many of these industries are still afloat. They, like I said, we're spoon-fed an illusion of artificial scarcity, but like I said, we have six times as many homes as we do homeless people. So we just need to show the people that are relying on the state, and that, you know, have not had the time to change their mind, not had the time to do their own research. We need to show them that we don't need the state, that all we need is each other and equal access to resources.
All right, so Travis is asking a question. Does anarcho-communism, would that allow? And well, here, let me clarify this first. So you're with the Libertarian Socialist Caucus. The flag you have in the back is the anarcho-communist flag, right? Is there, so you're an anarcho-communist. Is there any distinction between, or I guess, is there even an anarcho-socialist, or is what's kind of the difference between socialist and communist?
So I see socialism and communism and anarchism as synonymous. Everything that socialism, communism, and early anarchism advocated was a classless, stateless society. That's why I don't see the USSR, the DPRK, Venezuela as communist, because the state owns the means of production over the people. So in our anarcho-communism, libertarian socialism, that is synonymous. But with our caucus, we are a big tent caucus. So we have mutualists, we have Georgists, basically anybody on the left side. But I mean, there even are people more on the right side of the economic spectrum in our caucus as well. But it's just like I said, we believe in a classless, stateless society in which the workers own the means of production. So that means that they're entitled to the full product of their labor, as opposed to the capitalist system, where those that don't work get the mo reap the most benefits. They get profits, while the actual people that are contributing labor are working paycheck to paycheck, you know, and struggling to get by. So we believe that everybody that's contributing deserves the right to the products of their labor. That's all I believe.
Okay, so to get kind of back to Travis's question, he was asking, so are you, I think we kind of talked about this earlier, but I guess this is a little bit different. As an anarcho-communist, are you allowed to trade products and services? So we talked about kind of barter before. Would there really be any need to trade, or would you just go to whoever has whatever you need and say, I want that for now, and you know, whenever you need something, come to me and get it?
Well, yeah, like I said, of course, there's obviously a transitional period to where, you know, you don't need to trade. I mean, because, you know, right now we have to transition to post-scarcity. We have the resource available. We still have to work towards that. So, you know, for the time being, a barter system is a better system than the current system of currency that we're living under. So, you know, it's a good transition, but again, you shouldn't deprive somebody of natural resources. So, you know, like I said, if you want to trade products and services, I mean, that's cool. As long as you both agree, that's totally fine. I'm not against people, you know, for forming their own agreements. That's totally cool, as long as you're not infringing upon anybody else's liberty. So it's as long as everything's cooperative, it's mutually beneficial, then, you know, you can do what you want. But what I'm saying is, we're moving to a period where we don't need to worry about scarcity. And so, you know, we're gonna be, well, except with, I mean, the state is preventing us really from getting there, state and corporations. So, you know, that's something that we have to work to get past, and we have to, like I said, end our dependence on them and, you know, start speaking out against different rules that say that you can't have a neighborhood garden, that, you know, you can't feed more than 5 homeless people in a certain area like we have here in Houston. You know, there's so many rules that there's so many laws against the homeless. Homelessness is essentially illegal in so many places. But yeah, like back to the trade, you know, you can trade as long as you're not depriving me of my right to life. If, like I said, as long as you're not taking the only food that's available and, you know, saying that, no, you have to do something for me for it. Because, like, what if I've been starving and I can't work? Because that's ultimately what's going to happen if people don't have access to food. You know, Emma Goldman said, if you're hungry, ask for work. If there's no work, then ask for bread. If there's no bread, then take bread. And that's not a form of aggression on the part of the starving. They are doing everything to sustain their life. And if somebody has surplus and they're not giving you access to that, or they're saying they have to do something for them, that's depriving them of their liberty and their right to life. And that's just wrong, because we do have the resources available to feed everybody. And Jeff Bezos himself could end world hunger. The estimated cost of end world hunger is about $30 billion. Jeff Bezos' net worth is $143 billion right now, and that's what's on the books. You know, and he'd still live comfortably. I mean, that's still quite a bit of difference. $100 billion, yeah.
I think that's an interesting proposition right there, because to begin with, you know, it's not so much a scarcity issue as a distribution issue. So, for example, you've got, you know, people who live in, you know, one part of the country, which might have, like, you know, really great fertile soil that's got all kinds of stuff growing out of it that you can eat. But then you might have some people that are living, like, in deserts where food just doesn't grow. It's a lot more difficult. You have to put a lot more effort into making sure that you have food, and it's just more scarce. So even right now, there's all kinds of statistics that say the food is available. There is enough food for everybody to eat. It's just not in the right places. And I know, you know, you talked about a lot of food going in the trash. But even then, like, the food that goes in the trash is not, you know, on the other side of the world where it needs to be, where people are starving. So it really takes a lot more, you know, it takes a lot more effort. And I guess I'm wondering if, you know, if what's kind of stopping you from doing this now? Because you talk about, okay, these people have all this money, but you're saying money is, you know, basically or it was created from labor to begin with. So why don't you just take all of your labor and say, forget money, just take all your labor and then, you know, create the fuel that you need and build a plane and get some food and fly it over to where it needs to go to solve that problem? Or do you need more people? Do you need more people to be able to do this? What's kind of stopping you from doing that now? Or is it just government?
I mean, yeah, the government's a big part of it. If I decide to, you know, build my own plane that's powered completely by renewable energy, they're going to shoot me down.
Right.
You know, so we don't have the right to free movement even in our own country. Like I said, if I was able to do that, if I was able to get with a bunch of like-minded people and construct that plane, and, you know, we have the technology, we have hydroponic systems, we have, 3D printers, we have the material to distribute, we could do that, but that would threaten the very existence of the state and the corporations that have invested in the state. So yeah, that's a huge hindrance. I mean, there is the threat of force on both sides, like I said, the corporations and the state. So, you know, again, they're like, there's a lot of places where you can't legally collect your own rainwater.
Right.
You know, there's so many different regulations that prevent us from living sustainably, living off the grid. I mean, Henry David Thoreau is a huge famous example, you know, he didn't want to participate in the government system. He wanted to just live in a cabin in the woods, and that wasn't okay with him. You know, it's always, there's always going to be, it's just the desire for power, the desire to dominate your fellow man, to have power over him. I mean, that's how I feel about both the state and corporations, is they're actively through the process, through a hierarchical system, they're keeping us from achieving, like I said, free food for all, free housing for all. They're keeping us from achieving post-scarcity because it cuts in their profits and their lavish lifestyle. You know, they don't care because right now, like a bunch of CEOs, they have plenty of security, both private security and the state. So, you know, if you're in Silicon, in San Francisco, you know, you've lived there all your life, and you know, the Twitter office is growing, and you know, more people are moving over there. Property values are going to go up, and you're going to be forced out of your house. And you know, that's a natural thing. Is like there's homeless people every few feet, basically, and that's what happens. But then the rich person that lives in that mansion can then say, hey, you know, I don't like this person being around here. They're loitering, and scoop them and throw them in jail on your dime. You know, so there's you know, they're both they're powerful institutions that are actively working against us. You know, no matter how hard we try to get by, no matter what we contribute, like I said, people of my generation are working 2 to 3 jobs just to get by, and we don't have money for luxuries. We're literally just available. We're just able to barely provide for ourselves, and some people aren't.
Right. So it sounds, I mean, I have to say, you know, I know you take a lot of shit, 'cause I see so many people posting like there's no such thing as libertarian socialism. I have to say, you know, listening to you talk, there are a lot of things that sound like they're completely compatible. Like, you know, you said if you can get enough people to work with you to build a plane, and you know, the only problem you have is that the government's going to shoot it down. Like, I totally agree with you. Let's get the government out of the picture and allow you to do that. I think there's a lot of really great ideas that you have, that, you know, that are, and you're willing to, you know, basically volunteer and put forth your effort. And I didn't hear too much of you saying you're going to force other people to contribute if, you know, if they don't want to, which I think is also completely compatible with ANCAP. So I think there's, you know, this conversation I'm sure is going to keep going on, for probably decades. With a lot of different people, but I think it's really interesting, a lot of things that you have to say, and for any of the ANCAPs or libertarians that are watching, you know, I think you can really consider some of the things that he's saying as compatible with what your beliefs are, even if there is a little bit of friction and differences. I think it's really interesting, some of these points. So again, Dane, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me and have a civil conversation about this. That said, before we wrap this up, are there any websites you want to plug, or is there any, you know, good sources of information that you want to point out that, you know, others can learn more about this?
Sure. So we have a very active Facebook page, very controversial Facebook page, Libertarian Socialist Caucus, the Libertarian Party, www.facebook.com/libsocialcaucus. And then we are on Twitter at libsocialcaucuslp. And, you know, right now, I also wanted to say that we are running two candidates for office this year, Matt Keenel for Michigan District 22 and Benjamin Dreyeck for Michigan District 36. They're both running as representatives of the Libertarian Socialist Caucus, and you know, of course, Matt Keenel famously, you know, just recently ran for chair. Being an open anarcho-communist, running for LNC chair was a huge deal, and that you know, helped you know, me feel accepted into a party that I didn't really necessarily feel accepted by before. And there's a lot of people who feel the same way, that the Libertarian Party for the long time hasn't exactly represented the working class. And so that's it's to be able to allow somebody with, you know, our perspective to be able to like get on stage and speak. And the fact that I was able to speak at the convention, and we almost got a bond immunity state resolution passed. I mean, that's a big deal, because we should, you know, both agree that we should be growing the party, we should be working to bring more people in, and we should be working together for liberty for all. So that's, you know, that's important. We can work together. It's just all about solidarity and you know, not infringing upon others' right to their individual liberty.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, Dane, it's been really awesome talking with you, and you know, we'll follow up. I talked to Matt Keenel, so hopefully I'll have him on the show sometime in the future too. And it's been great talking with you. Taxation is theft.
All right. Taxation is theft on the lower class.
All right.
Take care.